Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 289, recorded on February 27th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me, as always, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome, and it's totally cool to be here. I love it.
Yay.
Yay.
And Adam Christensen is also here. He's from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Things are well.
Things are well. I bought some new coffee from Whole Foods, some whole bean. I ground it up, made some coffee. Tastes delicious. So I'm awake and ready to talk about stuff.
Okay. What do we got to talk about?
Well, the iPhone SE, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So instead of the 5 SE, it's going to be called SE for, I guess, special edition.
Oh, just straight up SE.
Yeah. So I guess it's a, they're just kind of, it's a trim level now, right? But I don't know. So the idea, I guess, more relevant to the whole SE story. Did we talk last week about how it's basically going to be a slightly rounded off iPhone 5 sort of enclosure?
No, I don't think we got to that.
Okay.
Later this week.
So it's,
after we recorded the last show, I believe.
So is the idea that the back is going to continue to have the glass?
No.
Oh, no, that was the iPhone 4.
It looks like it's going to be the same metal back with the antenna lines as the 6S design.
Yeah.
Oh, so it is going to look like the 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except the bottom ports look more like the 5S in terms of like the speaker grills and stuff like that. It's got the double row of holes instead of the single.
The double row of holes instead
if
of the single.
You look at the bottom of your phone where the lightning connector is on a 6.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
See how it has one line of holes for the speaker grill?
Yes.
The design for the
it's going to have two
SE
rows.
Has two rows.
Yeah.
And all the port layouts look like the bottom of a 5S, not a 6.
Uh-huh. I got
the back
you.
Looks like a 6. The top looks like it still has, from the profile to me of the schematic that was supposedly leaked, to me it looks more like the 6 in terms of like having the kind of rounded glass. Now, some people are saying it's more squared off, but I don't know. It seems pretty rounded to me from that.
Well, it's going to, it looks like it's going to have flat edges still, but the edges, the transition from the sides or from the band around to the front and the back will be more rounded.
More rounded.
And
yeah,
there will be a
so
button on
has,
the,
it kind of has the flatter side.
Yeah. And the sleep wake button will be on the side instead of the top. Now it's weird. I don't know.
So basically what they're describing is the iPhone homunculus.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, it will be on the side and not on the top.
Yes. Someone suggested that the SE stands for same enclosure.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
That's stupid.
I mean,
and I realize I probably just offended someone. Sorry,
well, that's fine. We are
for all intents
somebody.
And purposes, to me, it looks like it's going to be a 4-inch version of a 6S, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's got the A9, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which
I think it's the right thing to do. It's what I've been sort of saying all along.
But why not just call it the iPhone Mini and then call the 6, we'll just call it the iPhone, and then the Plus, we'll call it the 6 Pro.
I think
Pro.
That would have been a good idea.
I'm totally with you.
I think that would have been a good idea. Yeah, that they need to do that. It's getting
the
insane.
The SE is weird.
Yeah, there's no reason to have
maybe,
so many.
Maybe SE stands for small edition.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's just like when they put I in front of Mac and they just said it stands for internet and you and all these other things. Yeah, what does I stand for these days? Internet? Information?
It stands for I'm the letter that Apple is taking off the front of our product names.
Huh.
Because at this point, it seems like every new product that comes out, there is no I anymore.
Except for the iPhone.
And I think mean,
it will remain that way.
Yeah, I mean, any iPhone and the iPod.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the iSight.
Yeah.
Oh, good times.
They still call it that.
Well, they brought it back. Because it used to be the iSight camera, you know, which was the external camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then the internal camera on the Mac carried that name for a little while. Then they changed it to FaceTime camera.
And now the FaceTime camera is the one on the front, and then the iSight is the back.
Yeah, so they brought the iSight name back for the back camera. It's really confusing how Apple just recycles product names.
Well, I get that calling it iSight makes sense because it's what your eyeballs would see, right? Because it's from your eyeball perspective. It's like, hey, look at this thing that I'm looking at. It's my iSight camera.
You mean,
why don't they just call it the camera?
Yeah.
Eyeball camera. Eyeball cam. Like, did you see the Samsung's little eyeball, like BB-8 thing for their new phone?
Mm-hmm. Droid. It's a droid, right? It's a little robot.
I think so, but I can barely hear you, Adam. Your Skype is just taking a dump.
It's actually the NSA.
Really?
They're punishing Adam.
Yeah. Maybe.
How about now?
Nope. Maybe stop torrenting.
Camera one.
So the iPad Air 3 seems like it will be branded as an iPad Pro.
That's what the rumors are saying now.
What's the deal with that? So we're going to be calling the big one the iPad Pro, the super big one,
mm-hmm.
and the 9.7 is going to be called the iPad Pro as well?
That's what they're saying. Which on one hand makes sense if they're looking at the mid and large size screens as pro level devices, and then you have the mini for everyone else. But then we're back in the same problem we have with so many Apple products, which is how do you know what product it really is?
Yeah.
Like when you talk about MacBook Pro.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think they see just Apple need doing to... that, but at the same time, I kind of hope that they keep a separate name for the mid-size iPad just so people can tell them apart. Maybe they could just call that one iPad.
Yeah. And do exactly what we were suggesting for the phones.
Yeah, so you have iPad mini, iPad, and iPad Pro. There you go, problem solved. I really hope Apple pays attention to this show.
They do. I'm sure they do.
Our bill is in the mail.
Yeah. Is there anything else? So I guess the idea, of course, with the new 9.7-inch iPad is that it's going to...
Am I any better yet?
Nope. It's going to support the Apple Pencil. It's going to have... what else?
This will be the first iPad with a flash for the camera.
Oh, yeah. Beyond the iPad Pro, right? The iPad Pro doesn't have a flash.
That is correct.
This will have the A9X processor RAM upgrade. So essentially the same internals as the iPad Pro, just a smaller size.
Just a smaller size plus a flash. Yeah.
I like that.
I like that too.
I almost want one. I mean, I do want one. So if somebody wants to send me one, you know, just do that.
Yeah, right now I'm having what I'll call a first world iPad crisis.
Because tell me about
it. Love using my iPad Pro for so much,
mm-hmm.
but I'm then I love having the iPad Mini for content consumption. reading books and reading content off the internet and Twitter and you know, stuff like that. So for a little while, I've been thinking the next iPad purchase I make, I'm just going to upgrade my iPad mini because I'm still using a first generation model. And it's at the point now where it's too sluggish for me. And I thought, yeah, I'll do that. And I'll just skip the midsize iPad. But I've been using my midsize iPad again recently. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I totally get why I want to use this a lot of the time too. So what a horrible problem I have.
That is a really terrible problem.
I know. Do I have three iPads? Or do I sacrifice the mid-range size and just upgrade the mini?
So are you going to keep the mini in a purse, and then the mid-size iPad? What are you going to do with that? Because I'm assuming you're going to keep the Pro at home. That's going to be your home iPad.
Well, I actually take the Pro out a lot.
Oh, and you take pictures with it too?
No,
I want to see that.
I'm sure you do.
Can you get someone to at Starbucks? So you're taking a photo at Starbucks of something, maybe a coffee drink with your iPad Pro?
I could totally stage a shot for you.
I would really enjoy that.
Yeah, I could do that. the only time I took a photo with the iPad Pro was when I needed to test to make sure the camera worked.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I've used the front-facing camera for FaceTime.
That's nice.
Quite a bit, but yeah.
I still think about the times when the iPhone didn't have a FaceTime camera, and everybody said, oh, of course you wouldn't have a FaceTime camera, a front-facing camera on the iPhone. It'll just be a shot up your nose.
Well, for some people it is.
Yeah, you need to lift it up a little.
Right. And you know, to be fair, for some people using an iPad with a front-facing camera for FaceTime, it's still a shot up the nose.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we'll ever get multi-person FaceTime as we did it back in like 2003?
I sure wish we would. I don't see any reason why we can't at least with the iPad Pro, because we have a processor that is totally capable of handling that.
Well, I mean, and I mean like literally 2003, wasn't it, that we had iChat AV?
Yeah, something like, yeah, it was many years ago.
And so those were G4s, right? And I think...
Oh, that's right.
I think the iPhone is probably like twice, if not four times faster than a G4 at this point.
Yeah, actually at this point, I'd say that anything from an iPad 2 forward probably has more horsepower than a G4.
Yeah.
And someone's going to be doing facepalms right now. They'll be like, oh my God, Jeff, how can you possibly say that?
Yeah, we're being hyperbolic, whatever. But I guess it probably comes down to what that experience would be like, right? Because we were doing that on our Macs.
The iPad Pro has a screen plenty big enough to handle that.
I think even the regular iPad, but...
Sure. I wouldn't want to do it on an iPad mini. I say that now, but then if they give me the feature and I try it, I might be like, hey, I'm all about this. But sure, on a regular iPad or an iPad Pro, I could totally see doing the multi-chat FaceTime thing.
Yeah. So can Adam not get back? Is he restarting?
Maybe. He just seems to be gone.
He's gone. Okay, we'll move on. Siri looks like it's going to be coming to the Mac in OS 10.12.
Yeah. If we didn't have the iPhone 6S right now, I would just be saying no, not at all, no. But with the 6S, they added in the thing where it does the voice recognition. So Siri responds to your voice.
Yeah.
And they could do the same thing on the Mac, and then it would be a reasonable thing.
Well, I mean, you could also just not have Hey Siri. You could have it as a button-only thing.
Well, even if you have it as a button-only thing, and you have three people in an office using Siri, you need to have a way for your computer to distinguish your voice from everyone else's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that'll be cool. I'll enjoy some Siri on my Mac.
I will definitely play with it.
Especially considering the additions we've had to Spotlight, right? You can do a heck of a lot more with Spotlight search these days, and it's very Siri-like.
Yeah, I'd be totally down with using Siri to search for documents on my computer.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we should talk about the FBI stuff.
Okay.
Because, all right, so there were like tons of stories coming out this whole week. So the FBI insists that Apple cooperate despite resetting the iCloud password on the shooter's phone. So basically, hey, yeah, that we reset that password, but we still want you to do it. It was interesting, the resetting of the iCloud password thing, because originally, wasn't it Apple said the FBI did it, and then FBI said that the county did it, and then the county said
yes, but the FBI made us.
Yeah. Now, what I haven't heard anybody talking about is how is an iCloud backup accessible and unencrypted, even though it's backing up data from an encrypted device?
Apparently it decrypts for the transfer to iCloud.
But no.
Well, then how is it?
There's certain parts of iCloud backups that are not encrypted were not encrypted, I think, dependent upon, depends on what data you're talking about, is what was my understanding of it.
So that would mean that those same bits of data would be unencrypted on the phone by default? Or?
No. So the iPhone, when you use a passcode lock, uses whole disk encryption, basically. So everything is encrypted on the phone. So somewhat of what Jeff's saying is correct. I mean, in the transmit of the data to iCloud, the data is encrypted because it's all going over HTTPS.
Right.
Right. But I mean, when your phone is unlocked, the data is unencrypted.
Right.
So when your phone is running backups, you know, it's going to be sending that data over an encrypted connection, but not all of that data that is stored in iCloud. It's my understanding, not all the data that's stored in iCloud is encrypted. And I think Apple has a document somewhere in the support documents that says what's encrypted and what's not encrypted.
Yeah, I think the stuff that's not encrypted is related to Apple specific apps.
Yeah.
And it's only certain apps where the data is not encrypted.
Yeah, like I'm not positive if your like contacts backup data is encrypted or not. I can't remember what's encrypted and what's not encrypted.
Say that the whole thing that I'm getting at is Apple has said if you hadn't changed the iCloud password, you could have just taken the iPhone to a known network and left it overnight, and it would back up to iCloud and thereby allowing you access to a more recent backup.
Backup. Yeah, we could give you that backup data. So,
but how does... My thing is, if the phone is encrypted, the phone is entirely encrypted, how does iCloud decrypt that data on the way to iCloud in a backup?
It has to be decrypted in order to do a backup. It's the same way.
But how does it do that?
It's the same way that your Time Machine backups still work when you have a File Vault backup or your Crash Plan backups or any other backups. The system itself has access to the unencrypted data. When you're operating on your phone, when it's doing backups, it's unencrypted.
When my backups,
because the phone is unlocked.
When I do backups on my iPhone, It's the automated process. So power cord plugged in, middle of the night, my iPhone is locked and I'm not touching it, and the data backup happens.
Yeah, but the phone itself can unencrypt the data. You can't back up encrypted data. So typically the way most encrypted online backups work is the data is read from the disk. The system has to be able to read the data, so that data is unencrypted. It's sent up to the cloud over an encrypted connection, typically like HTTPS, so that it can't get intercepted and transmit, you know, in transmitting. So you can't have like a man in the middle kind of attack. Again, and I'm not a cryptologist, you know, I'm not an expert in this stuff, but this is my understanding of how it works. And then when it gets to the cloud, it gets encrypted on the storage end. So again, like back hold disk encrypted, if you're using you know, a service like CrashPlan. Like I know CrashPlan encrypts all of my data on their, that's stored on their servers. So, you know, like if the FBI raided their storage thing and wanted to get my encrypted data, they wouldn't be able to get at it. So I use FileVault on my local system, but that's not the same. It's not like it can just take the encrypted data and upload that to the cloud. It can't. You can't do that from what I understand.
Interesting.
Because on the other side, you wouldn't have any the keys, right? You can't just take a big chunk of encrypted data and throw it. Maybe you can, but I don't think most systems work that way.
I'm going to have to read their security documents because it's still weird
like
to me.
Like, you couldn't do a super duper backup, you know, if the data was all just encrypted.
What's a super? What,
you know,
I mean,
like if you had a whole disk, super you know, like a clone. You can't make a clone of your hard drive if the hard drive is whole disk encrypted. You can't just like clone it. It has to be in a decrypted state.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to have to do some more research into that. I'm going to have to figure that out. Maybe find some. Do we know anybody who's good, who knows encryption? Yes, no?
That's a good question.
We should find them.
I talked to George Starcher on security stuff, but I don't know that he's an
Okay.
All right, yeah. Listeners, who's the encryption expert we need to talk to?
Yeah, let us know. We'll talk to him. The director of the FBI says that they're not trying to set a precedent with this whole case. Of course, that is.
But then he also says it's going to set a precedent.
Yeah, he's a cool dude.
His mom must be proud.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then of course I think it was maybe a day or two later when we found that the Justice Department wants data from 12 other iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
They're chomping at the bit. They can't wait for Apple to make this software that I guess they would destroy and then have the same engineers make a new version of the same thing, because you have to destroy it, because that's what the FBI is saying that they would allow them to do, and then unlock another one and do the same thing, or just keep it around, which is probably more likely.
They would have to keep it around.
Okay, so I want to bring this up. Jeff, have you researched? You brought this to my attention hours after the show last weekend, that the software created by Apple, if they did create the software that allowed the FBI to brute force the iPhone's passcode, would be deemed as a forensics tool in court proceedings, and any forensics tool needs to be vetted by third parties for authenticity and reliability and that sort of thing. Which would, if true, mean that third parties would need to look at Apple's source code. And that's source code for iOS, which would make it really easy to find any sorts of bugs or errors. And of course, then find vulnerabilities in iOS, which would just kill iOS security.
Right. Also, since it would have this this workaround for the passcode lockout, anyone that looked at the code would have access to that as well.
Well, okay. So, but what's the significance of that? Because you can't just write your own version of iOS and then deploy that yourself.
Well, if they have access to the code, they could do just as Apple has done, and find a way to sideload it, or excuse me, as Apple would have to do. They have not done this yet.
But Apple would have to sign the code. You would still need the signature on that operating system on that build?
Well, if you've got everything to make the operating system, meaning you've got all the code, my guess is you may also have the resources to where you could mimic a signature from Apple.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could probably, I'm thinking to thinking about jailbreak stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the part of the signature thing is the code in the operating system partition needs to meet certain checksums with regards to the signature, and to jailbreak these days requires that you hack the kernel to disregard those checks.
Okay.
As far as I know.
If you have an iPhone in hand that you want to extract data from,
and you happen to have the source code to iOS, you could just tell the kernel and the iOS to just not do those checks.
Yeah. And so to fill in a couple of the blanks here for
Adam doesn't sound happy.
This discussion came from.
Okay.
It occurred to me after we recorded last week that Apple is making a forensic tool. It's assuming that they have to follow through and actually do this. And other forensic tools that are gathering information to be used as evidence. The easy things that come to mind would be you have polygraph tests, you have breathalyzers for DUI tests, and then you have tools that you use to extract data from computers. And all of these have gone through all kinds of third-party testing and evaluation to validate that the information that they can collect or allow to be collected has not been altered, so that you are not skewing evidence in favor of the defense or the prosecution. And so you need to have third-party validation for all of these things. Now, if Apple is creating a tool that gives the FBI or any other law enforcement agency the ability to extract additional data from a device, in this case an iPhone, then the tool that they create is now subject to those same independent validations that any of these other tools have to go through, which means that Apple would need to hand over, they would be compelled by the court, because the code would be subpoenaed by no one else than by the defense. And any defense attorney that did not subpoena this code would be totally negligent in their duties. So then this code needs to be handed over and evaluated and tested on multiple devices. So that means Apple would have to give them a version that is not locked to just the one iPhone in the case, but is open to be used on multiple devices. Once that's out, that's just out. You're not getting that back, and it's going to be in anyone's hands that want it. Apple does not want this to happen. And
that would only be required if they found...
So subpoenaing Apple's operating system would be, in my opinion, a legal requirement if evidence was recovered from an iPhone that was then used as part of a criminal prosecution.
So have you done any more digging into this topic? Have you...
Yeah, well, this is all stuff that I already knew, but I went back and looked more at how this has worked over the years with other forensic instruments, and the pattern is there.
What about software?
Give up.
Oh, yeah. Forensic computer analysis. The tools that they use are routinely vetted. And the people that use the tools have to testify in court as to how they used the tools, why they work, how they work. All this stuff has to be very open and transparent. Otherwise, you raise doubt as to the validity of the evidence that is collected through these means.
Now, what about in the past with iOS 7 and and previous when Apple was, I guess they had the security keys for the encryption. Is that correct?
I think the encryption, well, the data on our devices really wasn't encrypted in iOS 7 and earlier, was it?
That was my understanding, but then the meme of them having the keys has been floating around.
I think that's wrong.
Okay. For the sake of argument, let's just say that it wasn't encrypted, and that's kind of how Apple has had presented it. So basically, if law enforcement took the phone to Apple, Apple could then extract the data from the disk, from the phone.
Right, but prior to iOS 8, so iOS 7 and
correct.
Earlier.
So
companies were making forensic tools that would extract data from iPhones. And those tools were subject to evaluation.
Yeah. So they were subject to evaluation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, forensic companies would have to testify into court as to how their tools worked, and yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's pause here. We're going to get Adam back on the line and be back in a second.
Continue.
Let's continue. Yeah. Okay. So we're back. So Adam, what did you want to say anything about the forensics tool stuff?
I think Jeff responded to it already. I was just going to mention that, I mean, Jeff is absolutely right, but they would have to have found evidence on the phone that they would even put into a court case. And the ultimate thing with this is I'm not sure that there is a court case that's even going to come from any of the data that's on the phone, because both suspects are dead, and most of the investigation so far seems to indicate that they're not associated directly with, you know, ISIS or any other terrorist organization. They were inspired by these organizations and were acting totally on.
Yeah.
Now, and keep in mind, San Bernardino police chief Bergwan said that they really don't expect to find any useful data on this iPhone anyhow.
Well, that's code for this is a fishing expedition.
He made it pretty clear this is a fishing expedition. They just want to see if there is anything there.
Yeah.
But they don't expect that there will be. So this case is not the one where Apple's code ends up in court. But the next one is. And there are next ones. We have like 12 other cases from the DEA, from the DOJ that are waiting in the wings to see what happens with the ruling on the court order in this case. Plus, we already know that the district attorney from Manhattan is lining up a lot of cases where he wants to force Apple to let them bypass security codes so they can get into iPhones. And even though I don't have other law enforcement agencies that I can toss at you right now, what we do know is that Tim Cook has said that he has been contacted or is aware of hundreds of law enforcement agencies that want to use this code as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it will eventually become, it will be used in some court case at some point.
Right. And don't forget, we also have the real possibility that if this ruling stands, then there will be foreign governments that will line up and say, we want that too.
Yeah. Now, I guess it comes down to, in my mind, I'm thinking if the FBI wants to, or any police department wants to subpoena information in this manner, they legally can do it. And I guess I should say not so much.
They can legally request it.
They can legally request it. And in the past, if the information was accessible by the company, they were obligated to retrieve the information for them. As Bill Gates kind of pointed out in his interview regarding this issue, if a law enforcement goes to a bank and subpoenas them for information about an account, they have to give them the information.
Yes, but that organization, in this case a bank, can also contest the warrant if they feel it is not valid. So it's not like this is just a very binary thing. Have an order, you must comply.
Ah, okay.
But so yeah, I guess Apple has contested warrants in the past.
But I think the primary issue here is, you know, there is precedent for those sorts of requests, the bank information sorts of requests where it's readily available, where the bank of course has that information.
Yes.
But in this situation, it's unique because the government is it's trying to compel Apple to write software that would degrade the security of their operating system in order for them to try to crack the security, which is a completely new situation. So I guess it kind of comes down to whether the government can compel a company to write software for something they want.
Right.
And
also, does the government have the authority to turn a business into an agent for the government?
Yeah.
Which, in a manner of speaking, is what would be happening here.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. They would be, of course, Apple would want to bill the FBI for this work if it were done, because it would require quite a bit of manpower.
Right. And the court order says that that Apple can bill a reasonable amount. Now, there isn't anything that says what that reasonable amount is.
Sure, but they would be basically a contractor for the FBI.
Yes.
In some ways. A forced contractor, if you will.
Yeah. You know, the last time we had forced contractors in this country, we kind of ended up with a civil war.
Well, yeah.
And I know that that's not the same thing. I am not saying that this is slavery.
Yeah, good job, Jeff.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be
tweet it, Jeff.
Callous to slavery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But would you agree that it kind of comes down to that issue, and that the reason that is bad is because down the line, the FBI could potentially compel Apple to violate civil liberties, such as, you know, having spying done, having backdoors to the camera, you know, allowing them, as Snowden said in the past, that the FBI could turn on a microphone or a camera on a phone that was just sitting there and you wouldn't know about it.
You know, on one hand, I could see where that would be a kind of hyperbolic argument. But on the other hand, this sure feels like it could be the door opening to the government forcing companies to create surveillance tools.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. And so Tim Cook did an interview from his office. It was at ABC, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a long interview. There were definitely some talking points, some memes. He was definitely coached. I don't know if he was coached or they just kind of decided on some points they wanted to hit.
I'm sure there was discussion ahead of time about what sort of topics would be discussed.
And how things would be phrased.
Right. And I'm sure that before this interview happened, that Tim sat down with his legal team and they're like, if you talk about this, here's how you have to say it.
Yes. So he, at least three points during the interview said that they believe writing the code that the FBI is requesting would be the software equivalent of cancer.
Which makes for a great soundbite.
It certainly makes for a great soundbite. But it also, I feel, does make sense. If you think about what we've just been talking about, it You could also call it a slippery slope, but you know, calling it the software equivalent of cancer may be more apropos. Some people were upset that Apple...
You could also call it leprosy, or I don't know.
Sure.
But yeah.
But I mean, the idea of it spreading and metastasizing to different things. Some people were upset with him calling that. I don't think they chose those words lightly at all, especially if you consider the fact that the interview took place on Steve Jobs' birthday.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I get why some people might be offended by discussing or by using cancer to discuss that. They're offended, you know, that maybe they have family members or they themselves have suffered from cancer at some point or lost family members to cancer.
Sure.
Sure, I get that.
But, and, you know, then we get into the PC discussion and lose sight of what what the real point is.
Yeah. Well, to add a little perspective to that, my mom is dealing with breast cancer right now, and I was not offended by the statement.
Okay. Yeah.
So, for whatever that's worth.
So, I agree with him on this. It seems like it's a bad situation. It seems like... once the government can compel Apple to do these sorts of things, the line between legally sound request for information in a situation like this, and plain old surveillance phishing expeditions, you know, the kind of stuff that Edward Snowden revealed a couple of years ago, that line between those two things are going to blur. To the point where there is no line, and Apple is an agent for the government, and not just Apple, other companies as well. Microsoft, Google,
Facebook, yeah. Amazon.
Yeah, remember, definitely.
People are buying the Amazon Echo, and it just sits there, monitors everything around it all the time.
You said you have one?
No, I don't.
I don't want one. I don't want one of those because Amazon's listening to everything you say.
Yeah, it's by the nature of how Amazon Echo works, it has to monitor all the time so that it knows when to respond.
Yeah.
So a government entity could conceivably compel Amazon to change the software on the Echo as a whole or for a specific user so that without their knowledge, what's being monitored is also being recorded.
Mm-hmm. So there were some rallies at 50 different cities, over 50 in the U.S.
It didn't sound like those went all that well.
No, it didn't. So it wasn't the EFF, right? It was, what's the organization that organized this?
I don't remember.
Fight the Power or something like that?
Yeah, it was something like that. It wasn't EFF and it wasn't ACLU.
Yeah. But it's clear that there are people who are concerned about this. I don't know that I would have joined in a protest, though.
No, but clearly there are some people that felt it was important that they participate. So yeah. Good for them.
Now,
they're making their voices heard.
Yeah, more interesting is, and I guess it makes sense, the New York Times reports that Apple is working on security measures that it cannot hack for iOS devices.
Also for iCloud.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
See, that makes sense. I'm surprised that iCloud stuff can be accessed at all.
I have a hypothesis on this. And the hypothesis
China?
Is that because... Apple can easily reset passcodes for us for our iCloud accounts if we forget them, that there's a mechanism in there that also allows them to essentially reset the password for themselves or in some way it gives them relatively easy access to at least some of our content. So if they change how that system works, then they cut themselves out of accessing our data.
Okay, so a password reset would then constitute your old data is just useless.
Yeah. So what I'm wondering though is if my hypothesis is right, then if Apple does create a more secure iCloud so that they cannot access any of our data, does it also change iCloud in such a way that if we lose a passcode, we are just locked out forever?
I would imagine so. Or at the
very
least,
which is how it works with 1Password.
Right. Yeah. If you forget your vault password, you just say bye bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. You start your digital life all over again. I would imagine that would also include situations where the secure enclave truly does limit the password tries, moving that into hardware.
Yep. That seems like a reasonable change.
Although I should correct myself. It does enforce that on devices with the secure enclave, but I think it was Adam that pointed out that you can change the software on the enclave to get rid of that.
Right.
So make it so it's a hard-coded embedded thing.
Right.
So Adam might be back. Are you back, Adam?
Possibly.
You sound back.
Yeah, and you sound luscious.
Yeah. I'm suspicious, though.
Okay.
We'll see if it lasts.
All right, we'll see.
We can live in hope.
Any comments about the software equivalent of cancer or making software that even Apple can't hack?
No, I mean, that's
okay.
We've already commented that's going to be Apple's next step. I mean,
certainly makes sense.
Yeah. They're going to make sure that they, you know, for a future order like this, it's a non-issue on their end where, hey, look, we can't comply because technologically it's impossible. Like, there is no way for us to, so you can't even make the request because we can't fulfill it.
Yeah. And it's also interesting that it seems like both the FBI and Apple are pushing for, making this a legislative decision, not a court by court decision, right? They want some law on the books that says what Apple and other tech companies has to do. And I think that has a lot to do with them protecting themselves.
Well, the problem with this is they can get themselves in a bad situation going down this route too, though, because they're pushing for congressional law that would help them, but it could just as easily go the other way around. So again, sure. My concern, if Apple does the hardware thing and makes it so they can't comply with these orders, that there would be all kinds of people in government pushing for laws that would make it illegal for or require companies to put backdoors in. So it could go,
that's a very real concern.
They could push the government completely the opposite way where they say, no, you know, you did this. We are going to write laws that make that illegal. You have to have a way to let us get at this data.
Yeah.
So it could really backfire, you know, hopefully because we live in a democracy and there's a system of checks and balances. You know, I think Apple's contention would be, well, let them try, because if they try to pass those sorts of laws, those go completely against the Constitution, and we could fight it on that level. So it would basically, even if Congress passed a law that said, hey, you have to build in back doors, it would go to, you know, it would go to the courts, which is our whole system of checks and balances, and the courts would ultimately rule it as being unconstitutional and throw it out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think ultimately in either situation, though, so if they say one way or the other, Apple would be protected legally. Of course, I think they would want to fight a situation where they would be compelled to write this sort of software if that's what the courts decided, or rather, if that's what Congress decided. But I think that part of it, too, is they want to be legally protected against lawsuits from companies, from individuals who say that Apple protects or claim that Apple protects their data when they have this backdoor. So, and the other thing that Tim mentioned in the interview is think about the target that would be on their backs once they create this software, right? So ignoring potential for the software to get out by other means through third party vetting and that sort of thing. If Apple had the software in their possession at in their databases in Cupertino or wherever, because they would have to hang on to this because there are going to be many orders as we've discussed, it would open them up to attacks from hackers who want to get a hold of this stuff as well. Now, the thing that he doesn't mention tonight, it makes sense, is Apple already has the master key to iOS.
Yes.
It's already there.
For writing the software, sure.
Yes. So if someone hacked Apple today and found the master key, the signature key, the signing key for iOS, game over.
Well, no.
For all the hardware that's out there now.
Yeah, for existing hardware, yeah.
Yes.
But I think there's a process, too, through certificate validation where they could just invalidate that certificate and create a new one, right?
Yeah, and you can bet that that Apple would do that really fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand well enough how those... I mean, there are many levels of authentication that go on with
that. Well, it's
that.
Just like the thing, if you have an SSL certificate in your company and you're running an e-commerce website, if your certificate, the private portion of that certificate was compromised, you would invalidate that and you'd issue a new one, right, so that you couldn't, that connection couldn't be spoofed.
Well, couldn't you just then do a man-in-the-middle sort of attack?
Right, you could, but again, you're going to invalidate the existing certificate, so basically, Apple would have to force an update. They'd have to, redo the operating system, re-sign it for everybody, and redeploy it. I think the minute they broke the key, I think they could. I don't fully understand how this stuff works, but my understanding would be just like it does with a developer's app. So say a developer wrote a malicious app, and then Apple removes their developer key from the system. I think that software stops functioning or will not launch on phones, right?
Right.
Don't they already have that capability? And that's through
through
revoking the signing key. So you say
Apple also has the ability to pull apps from phones.
Right. Anything signed with this key is now invalid. Don't let it run. So I guess they could do that to the operating system and then force everybody to download and reinstall a new version of the operating system. That would be probably what they would have to do if their master key for iOS got, were to get stolen or compromised. I think that is the process, as sucky as that would be for everybody.
So you're saying that if tomorrow hackers got a hold of their signing key, Apple would then reset that certificate.
Right.
And then tomorrow iOS would stop working on every phone.
Potentially. I don't know if it works quite like that, or they would say, immediately, hey, you need to download. They would just push an update that has the new, the new signing signature and the new keys on it. And then just like they do. I mean, don't they already kind of do that for other operating systems now? I guess you just can't reinstall the old OS, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what they do with like jailbreaking and stuff like that? Or even with operating systems, like I can't go back and install like iOS 8 on my phone, right? Once I've gone to 9.
Right, because they've stopped signing those builds with their special key.
Right.
Right, but if they...
So
if the bad guys got ahead of their
key,
if the bad guys got a hold of their key, they could just...
I think they would roll out a new operating system with a new key, tell everybody, hey, there's been a security breach. You need to update to this new version we're pushing out right now. And then they would invalidate all the old versions and the old keys.
Yeah. Send us emails, people who know about this stuff. Educate us. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's how that would go down, though. I think they would push... They would come out publicly, say, look, this happened. Everybody needs to update. We're pushing out an emergency patch right now.
Right now.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Seriously. But I mean, for what it's worth, as I think it's important to point out every time that the government has probably tens, if not hundreds of thousands of iOS devices deployed throughout the various agencies that, you know, if the security of iOS were compromised, and it will be compromised, basically, I mean, that's what this is. We're compromising the security. That's what FBI is asking them to do, is to compromise the security of iOS. If that is possible, then all of their assets are at risk as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So as far as the Apple Car goes, Tim Cook is being a little tease.
Of course he is.
Of course. So he did an interview with Fortune, and I believe he was asked, what's going on with the Apple Car? Can you tell me more about the Apple Car? And I believe his comment was, can you tell us more? And he says, yeah, I'm probably not going to do that, as in, I'm not going to tell you more.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And went on to say that they explore technologies. They're always thinking about ways Apple can make great products, yada, yada. They talk about a lot of things and do far fewer. Debate many things and do a lot fewer. And then went on to say when was this? During the
One thing on that Forbes interview thing that I found interesting is he does comment that, you know, once we've dedicated a lot of, I think he alludes to like money.
Yes.
To mm-hmm. one of those things that they're exploring, he says that's when you know that we're committed to kind of bringing it to market.
Yeah.
And so, and then he goes on to say, basically imply that what they've spent on the car project so far is not a lot of money, which I find it very interesting because, I mean, the reports are that they hired hundreds of people. I want to say it was rumors were up to about 600 people working on the project.
Wow.
At some point, and it's
which
like,
shows you what scale Apple is talking about with money.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at the iPhone camera, when we saw that little series of interviews, they said they had what 80 different people working on the camera.
Right. So it's interesting that a 600 person team
is
working on a project is exploratory.
Yeah,
for Apple.
Small potatoes.
At least in Tim's mind, I'm not sure that I buy it. I think they're pretty committed. The only thing that gives me a little pause there is the recent reports that they put a hiring freeze on the car team. So sure. Maybe it's gotten to that point where they are exploring it, and now they're going, okay, well, we've taken it this far. Is it worth still pursuing, or what are we doing here? So they may be at a reevaluation point with that project too.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah. And during the shareholders meeting, so let's see, he said, do you remember when you were a kid and Christmas Eve, it was so exciting. You weren't sure what would be downstairs. Well, it's going to be Christmas Eve for a while, in response to, a question about the Apple Car.
Hmm.
Which could mean that Apple is working on a car, or it could just be that Tim was using that as an opportunity to say, we have a lot of really cool products that are going to be coming out soon.
Well, hey, they could have just dropped
so
that line.
Wear your brown pants.
Yeah. New betas came out. Another set of betas, both public and developer betas. Beta 4. 9.3, they changed the night shift icon to a moon within a sun. Yep, a better one.
I think. I like it better than the eyeball thing.
I do too. There's a new beta of Apple TV, or the tvOS rather,
mm-hmm.
which, according to the release notes, there's a firmware update for the Apple TV remote, the Siri remote,
mm-hmm.
which includes improved motion sensor performance and support for additional soundbar and receiver hardware. Mm-hmm. I noticed on my iPad that the multitasking, when you swipe through those screens, it used to be, for whatever reason, it was just hyper speed. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but you would swipe just a little bit and just, you'd just be flung to the end of the list. They fixed that for what it's worth. There's a new Apple or Apple Watch beta as well, which remains, I don't know, bug fixy.
Yeah, there hasn't been too many new things. I mean, by the time we're four betas into it, a lot of it is just performance tweaks and adjustments and stuff like that. I don't think there was any, in all of these updates, I don't think there was any big new feature that anybody noticed. You know, there are improvements to the existing features, like, you know, the dictation on the Apple TV and the multi-watch support for a single phone with the Watch OS, but that was all in there before, so...
Okay, so iPhone picks. Let's do Adam first in case you get.
I think it's going to hold up. I think I traced it down to something with my audio. I thought it was the network connection, but then I realized it was something called PSTN feedback was showing up in Skype. For anybody who might know about this, and it was saying it was reporting low input. And it was also reporting something like error delay or something like that, which was the two things that I was experiencing. And I reset the audio interface, and it seems to have fixed it. So hopefully.
Nice.
Odd thing to have happened, though. I don't know what was going on there. Regardless. So my pick is something. I think I saw this over on 9 to 5 Mac, and I picked it up because it was... They had a half price thing on Amazon, but even at full price, I think this thing is worth it. So it is a little accessory for your iPhone from Spigen, and it is called the Spigen, and I want to say key ring, but it's this little ring thing that you basically stick onto the back of your phone. It has like a gel. You know, that kind of gel stuff.
Oh.
And it folds almost completely, a style ring.
Yeah.
It's called the Spigen style ring. And so it kind of looks like you're putting almost like a little
drawer pull
or a bathtub stopper on the back of your phone. But it's really solidly built. And it allows you to, one, slide your finger through the ring so that your phone is securely attached to your hand. And one of the problems it solves is it lets you then extend your reach. This would be, I think, particularly helpful if you have like an iPhone Plus, like a 6S Plus or 6 Plus. Because you can put this on your finger and then, you know, you don't have to really tightly hold onto your phone because you're not going to drop it. It's basically attached to your hand with this little ring. So that part's kind of cool. But really what I like about it is then the ring can also be flipped out and used as a stand, both in portrait and landscape mode.
Oh, cool.
And then the other thing is they give you a little adapter to put onto your dashboard, and you can actually clip it on and have it be a dashboard mount.
Oh,
so
neat.
I had been using the little vent clip thing.
Oh, yeah, those are bad.
And it's been okay, but I like this one a lot better. It feels a lot more secure and solid. And I was worried because, you know, I used the Apple's leather case on my iPhone, and they showed in their example videos that this thing would attach to the leather case. And I've pulled it off and put it back on a few times. It always attaches solidly, so I don't know what this gel stuff is. And when you first pull it off the case, it seems to leave kind of like a little bit of mark, but you just sort of wipe it off and it comes clean.
Huh.
And it sticks really well. It hasn't fallen off, and I'm really liking it. And it's, I think the retail price on the Spigen site says it's like $24.99.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it. I think it was on, I got it on Amazon. The regular price is $12.99.
Yep.
And I got it half price. Yeah, at like $6.99 or something, like $5.99.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, it's a nice little accessory, and it folds flat, so I can leave it on the phone. It still slides in my pocket just fine. It's a little bit weird if you're trying to, you know, set it flat on a desk, because you can no longer kind of set it flat on a desk. But I just kick the little ring out and put it down, and then it's kind of at a nice like viewing angle when you just have it sitting on the desk, either in portrait or landscape mode. So I kind of actually like it just even for typing and tapping or swiping through tweets and stuff like that. It's a nice little handy accessory.
Nice.
So Spigen Style Ring.
All right, Jeff.
All right. I am going with actually, it's a comic book. And this fits in because we're talking digital comics here, although you can get it in print also. And this is Marvel Comics Darth Vader series. And I got into this a couple weeks ago, and I'm absolutely loving it. And I picked it up through Comixology, which, on a side note, I still find it incredibly annoying and weird to have to go to a website to buy comics, and I can go back to my viewer app and say, download these comics so I can now read them. I wish Amazon hadn't done that. But the Darth Vader series is awesome, and it takes place right after the first Death Star is destroyed, and it's what's happening in the Star Wars galaxy from the perspective of Darth Vader and the Empire.
Hmm. Is it canon? Is it canonical?
I don't know if it's being considered canon, but what they're doing is putting it together so it fits in perfectly with the rest of what is canon.
I gotcha. Think, didn't Disney kill all of the extended universe stuff? And I thought they were only allowing canon stuff.
Then in that case, this would be considered canon. Because this is...
I'm asking the question. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. They did. Yes. And so that being the case, then this would likely be canon because it's Disney Star Wars and licensed to Marvel to create the stories.
Oh.
Then in that case, they are creating content that fits in to canon.
Yeah, because Disney is not allowing anything outside... that they killed. They actually called it the expanded universe.
Yeah,
right. So you can pick up individual issues for I think they're like $3 or $4 a piece, or you can pick up the volume sets where it's like issues 1 through 6 and then 6 through 12, and those when you buy them that way. It saves you a couple bucks.
I'm going to have to wait for it to hit Marvel Unlimited.
Oh, you're going to love it. I mean, the artwork is wonderful. The storylines are great, and it's awesome to get to see Darth Vader as the Darth Vader that we expect him to be. I mean, because the Darth Vader in these comics, this is one guy you do not want to mess with.
Cool. All right, so my pick this week is 11/22/63, the new series on Hulu, which of course is based on the Stephen King book, 11/22/63, that came out a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I read the whole book. It's an awesome book, so I highly recommend the book. But the series on Hulu, you know, Stephen King books are gigantic. And of course they're doing a lot of editing in this series, but I believe the series to be very long regardless. And thus far they've done 2 episodes. What I'm enjoying, ignoring the whole you have to be a Hulu subscriber and you can only get it on Hulu, whatever, Hulu exclusive. I like that they didn't just dump the whole thing on us. I like that they're giving it to us one episode a week, because, you know, one
like regular TV,
yeah. I mean, it goes against the binge watch thing that we've been doing lately, but I think that's good because I remember when I binge watched House of Cards the first season. At the end, I thought, man, I really wish I had time to digest that episode by episode, and it would have lasted longer. And of course, with the second season, I'd binge watch that too, with the same feeling. But I like it. It, you know, of course it kind of forces you to have some self-control, and it allows you to stop and think about it and wonder what the next episode's going to bring and all of that stuff. It's so I think that there's they may be proving that there's validity to that dribble model.
Yeah, of course. It's also kind of fun to sit down and say, "All right, I've got my whole evening free. I'm getting my Jessica Jones on and just cranking through episodes."
Yeah, I miss free evenings.
I bet you do.
Yeah, they'll come eventually. One of these days, I'll get those back. But yeah, so 11/22/63. Check it out on Hulu. Like two thumbs up on the book. Definitely read the book if you like Stephen King, and check out the show if you have Hulu. So, have you guys watched that?
I have not.
Mm-mm.
Do you guys? I don't have Hulu, though.
Yeah, you probably.
Yeah, I don't have Hulu either.
Yeah, we have Hulu because there's, I think it's Jane the Virgin or something. It's the show we need to watch. I don't need to watch it, but my lady does. So we have Hulu.
So you need to watch it.
I don't watch that shit.
Yeah, I have but, I have HBO.
Yeah. Yeah, so with that, you can find our picks, iPhone show, blah, 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 iPhone picks and show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes, rate the show, leave a star rating, tell a friend. And you can send your feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com, questions, comments, schooling us on encryption, on signatures, all that stuff. Please, please, we would really like to get some good information on and how all that stuff intermingles and how Apple is pulling off the interesting security feats that they are. And at the same time, it's, you know, some things work, some things don't. It's complicated and confusing, so let us know. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and at Mattcast on Twitter and everywhere else. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Yeah, super apology for my crappy audio and connection today.
That's all right. It happens. And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, TMO Daily Observations Podcast. It's a daily show. Check that out. And at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
It's always awesome. And I'm glad that only one of us was having technical issues today.
Mm-hmm. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show. Ba-doop boop.
Ba-doop boop.
An iPod.
An iPod.
Internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Yuck. Yuck, yuck,
no. Who wants a stylus?
Stylus.
You have to get them.